Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello and welcome to Catharsis, the podcast where I lend a friendly ear to some fellow comedians who need to get some issues off their chests. I'm like a therapist, but free and therefore completely and utterly unqualified. We will be digging into pet peeves, old wounds and unpopular opinions. You can sweat the small stuff or even expel the big stuff with me. I don't know why I said expel the big stuff. I've already made it sound like someone's taking a shit at the beginning of the podcast. Before we open up the can of worms with the guest, I like to talk about a couple of things that have been on my mind. Because recently I was asked for a top beauty tip. And I just think the beauty process as a woman seems to be roughly remove hair from some areas, let it grow in others, repeat until dead. I feel like that's the entire cycle of being a woman. It's very relentless. Do I have any other beauty tips? Stand next to old people.
That's,
you agree with that? You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that in a way, but I think like let hair grow in some places and let it and take it away is kind of like the birthplace of modern agriculture, isn't it? And it's like what this whole capitalist system is based on.
Yes, yeah. You've heard her. This is my guest on Catharsis this week, the fantastic comedian, podcaster and writer, Alison Spittle. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Tim. It's an honour to be here, genuinely.
Have you got any other beauty tips you want to share?
I've taken a beauty tip, actually, from the news lately. Prince Harry brought out his book and talked about using Elizabeth Arden 8-hour cream on his frostbitten penis, and it's a very good product, and if it can do that for a penis, what can it do for my lips? So I've been using it lately. It's been amazing, like genuinely it's a great
product.
I've
loved it for years, but I feel this has ruined it for me. I feel like also I don't need to know what a prince calls his penis. I would be fine. his royal piss tube, I do not need to know. I think I could live my entire life without knowing that he calls it a todger.
I know, not the royal wee or anything like that.
But it is a top beauty tip. 8-hour cream. It's great for eye wrinkles, bags, lips, penises, apparently.
If it's good enough for a prince's penis, it's good enough for my face.
There we go. There we have it. Yeah. There's a product endorsement, if ever we had one. The first section of the show is called Old Grudges, and that's where we ask our guest, which is you this week, Alison, to tell us a personal gripe with someone from your past. Now, it could be someone at an old job, it could be someone from your childhood, could be someone from school, or a situation that happened where you left it feeling unsatisfied with the way it was resolved, or it wasn't even resolved. So just get it off your chest, hit me up.
So my childhood was like full of rage. genuinely absolutely seething anger. I used to be really into the idea of being an actress when I was a child, and it was something I really wanted to do, and I grew up in quite a rural part of Ireland, So there wasn't really a drama school or anything like that to go to. So the nearest thing we had to drama school in rural Ireland was the school nativity play. Like, it would happen once a year, and I was very into it. I really wanted the part of Mary, because I thought Mary was quite a meaty role. She's the only woman with lines in the Bible. She's like the Hermione Granger of the Bible. She's the only one you know anything about. So I really wanted to play Mary, and I was very, always like really inspired by Mary when I was younger. Especially like her fashion choices. Like, for me as an Irish woman, the inspiration of Mary in regards to fashion was kind of like, I remember she always had like a bolero and a flower crown, and I love that type of stuff. I love anything that covers your arms. When I was younger, I used to hide my arms constantly. I think it's like because my mum, who I love, like, your parents put their own fears onto you.
Yes.
And my mum was like, oh, you're going out, have you got a cardigan? Like, pop on a cardigan. Or like, if we're going to a wedding, it's like, where's your bolero? Like, please God, where's your bolero?
It's such an odd fashion thing, because I wore a bolero. I've got a picture of me on my 12th birthday, and I've got one, and it's got coins hanging from it. So it's like a proper bolero. Wow. Like, and I suppose we started calling them shrugs as well at some point, but like,
yes,
bolero,
yes,
was the one. And I was like, why have we decided that we were going to dress as matadors?
That's so true. And like, I don't know, Irish women, like, we love covering our arms up so much that like we would even have our arms covered up during sex. Like, the best porno name I think for an Irish woman, like film wise would be Not Without My Cardigan. Like, I feel like that would be perfect. So yeah, Mary is a big inspiration. And I tried out for the part of Mary every year when I was in primary school, and my headmaster, like, he's a nice man now, but we just didn't get on as an adult and a child. Like, once I was walking down the hallway and he said to me, Alison, you walk like a man. And I was like about 8 years old at the time, and I thought that was an incredible compliment. I was like, this man thinks I walk with confidence. This is amazing. He was in charge of who got the roles at the nativity play. So I would try every year to get Mary.
Not if you're walking on stage like that, Alison.
I know. You're more of a Joseph, he was saying. You don't have the peak femininity to be the mother of God. So like, even once, my mum had like this lovely little blue silky number. It was too short to be an actual like dressing gown, so I think it was actual lingerie. Like, it was a mini dressing gown, and I used to wear that to school. I used to take it out because I was thinking, this is peak Mary outfit here.
If they see me in this enough, I'm gonna get cast. Is that the thinking?
Yeah, going around wearing my mother's lingerie. Like, it was like, I don't mean, lingerie in Ireland in the mid 90s definitely had a sleeve. Like, it was just the way. So eventually there was only 6 girls in my class, and we were told that each year a different girl from the class would get to be Mary. It was our last year of primary school. I was the only girl who didn't get the role of Mary, and he gave me the role. I was delighted, and we were rehearsing, and I was like, really, I'd read the Bible. I was trying to get like in the mindset of Mary.
Did you go method?
Oh, I went, yeah, method. Started lying to people all the time. That's what they like. I went method by going like, yeah, God's the dad. Like, that was the method I was doing. But I had my hands in my pockets while rehearsing, and my headmaster looked at me and he said, do you want to play Mary? You don't look like you want to play Mary. And because of my hands in my pockets, he gave the role to my friend. So I never got to play Mary, and I was absolutely raging.
I am with you. I'm angry for you. You cannot be given the role of Mary and then have it taken away because you had your hands in your pockets, presumably too manly like you're walking.
Probably. He also, like, he would punish any boy that was bold. He'd make me sit up the front. And any boy that was a bold boy, he'd make them sit beside me. But the thing is, I was great company, so this was no punishment for any boy. Like, they would come up, they would have the time, I'd have impressions, I'd do everything.
You're very entertaining.
But I was like a butlin's red coat, so I was at the front of class.
So what, hello? I love, and it's such an Irish word as well, like for like someone who's a bit cheeky, is to say bald.
Bald,
being very
yeah.
bald today. I love it. Here we have a headmaster who has denied you the role for many years,
yes.
accused you of being too mannish
yes.
in your walk, and
yes.
then it, presumably because you had your hands in your pockets, which could be construed as shyness or just comfort.
Yeah.
It, was that an assumption that you were like too cool and didn't want to do it?
I think I was probably looking smug, because I was feeling smug
right.
at that stage. We just always had disagreements. He once, I think my mum went in to talk to him one day about something, and he came out and he did an impression of my mum to the class, and then all the class were laughing. So I think he was a bit of an entertainer himself. Like, I see him in the shop now and I'm kind of fine with him. But I am, like, looking back and I'm like, I, as a child, must have hit something in you that made you go crazy. Because that's crazy behaviour, you know?
If he is a bit of an entertainer, I think we've uncovered a nugget of truth here, which is sometimes when you dislike someone, and I'm not saying he disliked you as a child.
He probably did. I wouldn't blame him.
The stuff about you that he found difficult.
Yes.
Is stuff that he found difficult himself or couldn't express in himself. So that you were this person who was like, I want to entertain and I want to act and I want to be in the play and I'm super confident. And that maybe those things, maybe either he saw those things in himself and he was irritated by when he, you know,
yeah.
or he was like, why is this child so bold? I need to be more bold, or something in that. That,
yeah.
you know.
I was a real cheeky little monkey, I think. And I get it. Like, this is why I'd never be a teacher. I'd never be a mum. Is that, like, I know in myself that I'm capable of being cruel. You know what I mean?
Yes,
And
of
I
course.
Just don't want to do that to anyone. I can be really petty. I remember once I fell out with this woman. And she was really good at a song in karaoke. And I learnt that song. So then if we were ever in the same room, I would go up and I'd sing that song before she got the chance to.
That's the best piece of, like, petty revenge
yeah.
that I've heard on this podcast, Alison. I'm absolutely thrilled that you've shared that. Like,
yeah.
because there's a realness to that. There is a thing of going, how can I get you? I've fallen out with you. I dislike you. Oh, this thing that you're good at, I'm going to do it better. And
yes.
every time there's an opportunity for it to happen, I'm going to get up and do it first.
Not even better, just do it first. Like,
just
I would
do it first,
not even
yeah.
do well. You know what I mean? I'm just be like, I'll just half-arse it. Because she can't go up then and do that, and even if she was brilliant at it, it would still be a repeat of that song.
That
you know?
Is so... I do feel like this head teacher is one day going to get a shout-out from you. That might be your bit of catharsis around this
yeah.
story. Is that... Maybe at some point in your future, there's going to be a televised version of the Nativity with a bunch of comedians with you in your bolero.
Yeah. I was really genuinely mad over it because I really wanted to play it. And I think it did put me off wanting to be an actor, like when I was a, you know, a teenager.
One offhand comment from someone. It's sort of crazy, isn't it? One offhand comment from someone can make you think, can set a program in your mind to make you think that something's not possible.
Yeah.
And it's only when you're an adult and you unpack that and you go, who was even that person that said that to me?
Genuinely.
Thank you for sharing. And Ooh. Hopefully, you know, he'll live to regret his decision, Alison. Hopefully you feel a bit better getting that off your chest.
Oh, absolutely. And the weird thing is like, I wish him no ill will, but I do like chatting about it.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to, you know what
it's
I mean?
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you want, you know...
I don't want him cancelled.
You don't want him
like
cancelled. You just want to get it off your chest, and sometimes that's all we need to do.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This section of the podcast we call Topical Cream, and this is where we apply some balm to a stingy news story that's got you all heated up. Something in the news, doesn't even have to have been the past week, but the last couple of months. Something out there happening in the world. What's getting under your skin?
Genuinely, and I think it's a follow on from what we were chatting about there. Nepo babies. I would love to chat about it.
Yes, let's talk Nepo babies.
There's been two articles that have come out in the past few months. One is about American Nepo babies and one is about British Nepo babies. I have no ill will towards Nepo babies. I understand as well why they exist. Like, say, for instance, my dad's a builder and, you know, if I wanted to go into the building trade, I could see a way of doing it, you know, like, I
yeah.
could.
Yeah.
I know what a chippy is. I know who pays well. I know who's a good boss. You know, if I wanted to get into it, I could do it. So I definitely see why people within the creative arts, who have parents that are in the creative arts, would want to pursue a creative life. But I think the horrible kind of statistic for me is that, like, since the 70s, the amount of working class people that work in the creative arts have halved. And it's just, I think it's just an indictment of everything, isn't it? It's the...
Yes.
Yeah. And it makes me so angry and sad because, I'm from a council estate. I have incredibly posh, lovely friends who have parents in the industry and everything like that. And I have friends who have parents who don't work in the industry who I think are incredibly funny or incredibly talented at singing or anything. I can see people that have parents that are rich and creative. They have a confidence about them that you can never learn, you know? And the confidence is being able to live your life and knowing that there is a safety net for you. And if I, like, genuinely, I look at my life, I had a really good landlord in Dublin who didn't raise the rent and had the rent at a price that I could live comfortably in that house while on the dole. And he inherited the house and I realised looking back that if I didn't have that, I don't think I'd be pursuing comedy in any way, because I would have had to really get real about stuff and actually, you know, pursue something else that would, like, financially look after me. And I was able to work for free for about 4 years and pursue what I loved. So that is he's been my daddy in a way, that guy. I want to shout out Philip, lovely man. And I'm really thankful and happy for that. I think you should acknowledge all of your privileges, you know, and just be happy. Like, if you are a Nepo baby, I can get that you might feel attacked. We're not attacking you. I just respect you less than someone who's
grafted for it.
Yeah, that's all. That's all.
You know, we've got the Oscars and the Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah.
You know, when we kind of look at those, it's knowing that those opportunities exist for you. I just didn't even know what the Fringe was until I was like 28, 29. I was like, oh, this exists. And then I found out that every year, like, one of the big venues takes up Etonian boys to do a show and it's all paid for. I was like, oh, this is just like mind-blowing to me. And then, like, most of them aren't going to go on to be in entertainment anyway. Some of them might be like doctors or lawyers or whatever else. And I'm like, they just get to have this entry into the world. And that feels incredibly unfair. So when we talk about equality, you know, like, it's, you know, people like, well, it's not fair, is it? We are talking about equality of opportunity, not necessarily outcome.
Yeah,
but the opportunities to even know that they exist in the first place, that there's a way to make money from performing, there's a way to make money from art, and that exists. So, and I remember seeing the Nepo baby thing and seeing someone tweet kind of going, I think we should concentrate more on Nepo babies that are in politics and blah, 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 blah. Like,
oh, Lily Allen.
Lily Allen, yes. Like, yeah. And you're like, but people care about that as well. I think the positions of power, but I think in terms of an industry where you're looking to see, where you're looking to see people sort of represented, then you want to be able to see the representation. And I think it was Christopher Eccleston and Helen Mirren. You know, she's a dame, but she comes from a working class family. You know, she's a dame now, but she's like, this is terrible that we're not seeing the opportunity and thinking about the talent that you're missing. And I remember when I got my first agent, because I was with a kids agent, having like ringing. I just didn't know how it worked, right?
Yeah.
So even though I had on my dad's side of the family, his sister was an actress, but she sort of died when I was 11. No, not even 11, 9 years old. I remember meeting her a handful of times. Mm. Technically, I should have, like, that is an aunt who's working in, but no, I don't know. I've never met anyone from her life who's in that.
Yeah.
Who's in that industry, right?
So, on paper, like, you could be classed as an F-O baby if they didn't. You know what? It's interesting.
But I never knew of any of the world of anything. I was just, like, left school. I left school at 16. I was going to go and do my A-levels. I didn't. I left school at 16. And I was like, I wanted to be a journalist. That was my first thought, and writer. And then I was like, no, I want to act. I want to do this. So I literally got out the Yellow Pages and I rung every single acting agent I could find in it. And most of them just wouldn't even speak to me. They just sort of put the phone down. And then eventually I got through to one and she was like, come down on Wednesday. I have these improvisation classes and let's see what you're like. And I was like nearly in tears going, oh, you're the first person. And she was like, darling, I don't know who I'm turning down. You could be the next great thing. I feel like there's not the opportunity for working class kids. And when it costs so much to go to drama school now, and also how you live, like working jobs and stuff like that, I feel is like important that people who go into acting have, and I've done every single weird job under the sun before I was able to fully support myself by doing stand up as well, you know, in that side of the industry, that people have had like real jobs and real lives. Otherwise, what you get are these actors who've never worked. They sort of went straight to drama school. They're supported by their parents. And then they just go and do auditions and you're like, or they've got someone in the business, or like we enter into our first job at 16, 17, and you're like, but you don't know, you're portraying a person, a real human who's lived in the world. How do you have any of the experience to show that?
So do you think like people, actors should have on their CV, as well as horse riding and sword play, like also cashier work?
Cashier, like, waiter. Yeah, like I'm not saying you have to have done the thing that your character's doing, you know, there is acting in it. But I do think you need to have entered into the world of employment at some point, even if it's working in a call center, to go, I know what it was like to get up every day and go into an office and engage with these people. I think as a writer, it's essential. You know,
just
come through this system and then you're like, you can go away and write your novel, darling, because your father and your grandfather are in publishing. So you've got an open door and you go, oh, this person just doesn't know life. So how are they going to write life, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of why I love football. As in, footballers, you really can't get on a football team due to who you know. It is what you can do with your body, and it's one of the only industries as well that there's not a massive disparity between working class people and, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also why I feel weird when newspapers cover footballers and how they spend their money, and it's like, why do we care? Why don't you ask what Tom Hardy or Jude Law spending his money on? Like, why is it like this young guy that you've a problem with buying a mansion?
Yes,
and it's class.
It's class thing again. It's class.
I know, but nothing funny about that. But lovely to have a little rant.
But it is Nepo babies. There are you kind of forget how much, and then in every level, when you look at Hollywood. You know, like every single level of it, you go, oh, the director, the producer. And that's where the problem is, where you go, someone's giving someone else a job. Like, I've never had a door opened for me in this industry by someone that's a member of my family. I just haven't. Like, and you wouldn't have, like, and so many of us, like, or in comedy or in stand-up. And listen, there are comics who have their kids going to stand-up as well, and they can be really great at it. But, you know, there's just a shorthand.
Yeah.
There's just a shorthand that's immediately there that says, this is an area that you can understand. Otherwise, you just have no idea. You go, what's an agent? What's an agent? What's a manager? What's a residual? Like, this world of, like, not knowing how any of the business works. And also, that is a thing that's not taught at drama school as well. Mm. And I just say, so many people come out of drama school not knowing how to even do a commercial audition, or, you know, all the kind of stuff that I learned just from doing it when I got an agent.
I would have never been a stand-up comedian unless somebody suggested it to me. And that was because I was doing what, like... You know, you look at stuff, you know, it's because I was working in a radio station at the time that someone said to give it a go. And I just want everyone to give stuff a go, you know?
Yeah. So, Nepo babies, I think we're saying we don't hate you. What we do want is more opportunities for people in working class backgrounds and areas that, you know, that we feel are underrepresented. Thank you for sharing your... topical story, Nepo babies. Let's see where we are in 10 years. People will still be having them. Time to move on to your unpopular opinion. Alison, this is a thing that everyone hates but you love, or vice versa.
So I hate cake. That's my controversial
You hate
opinion.
Cake. Wow.
I don't like it at all. People are always kind of surprised when I refuse birthday cake, you know? Because I seem like the type of person that doesn't, you know, I'm not watching what I eat. But I just don't like cake. I don't like the texture of it. I think it's just a slightly sweet loofah or a sponge.
You wouldn't have been friends with Marie Antoinette then.
No.
Let them eat cake. Let them eat cake. So this is interesting. So texture is one of the things that I don't think I've ever met anyone before that doesn't like cake. I've met people that don't like certain types of cake. I'll meet someone who's like, well, carrot cake, like it's a vegetable in a cake. Or I don't like chocolate cake. It's too rich. I've never met anyone that is. This is very bold, Alison, to just come out and say, I don't like cake.
Now, of course, have I had exceptions to the rules? Yes. Like, once I was at a party, it was a snazzy party, and I was very happy to be there. And the birthday girl had just done Celebrity Bake Off, and she got, like, one of the people from Bake Off to make the birthday cake. I tried it, because I was like, look, obviously, of course I'm going to try Bake Off chef's cake. It was one of the best things I've ever had in my life. That was incredible. But... generally, if you're not like the winner of Bake Off, I'm not gonna bother with your cake. You know what I mean?
It's only top tier cakes for you.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Yes.
So do you think sponge? Then do you think sponge is a thing? Is it not moist enough for you?
It's never moist enough for me. It is. It just sticks to the roof of my mouth. Icing is just you're eating decoration. There's no purpose in it for the mouth at all. It doesn't feel good in the mouth. It doesn't taste good on the tongue. You were absolutely just eating decoration there. And I don't like the whole idea of... I think birthday cake is my big hate. Because, first off, you get someone just blowing their saliva all over this cake and then you're supposed to have a slice of it. Imagine if someone came up to you and you were going to eat some pasta and they went, wait a second... blue all over your pasta, please enjoy. You're not gonna eat it. You're gonna be like, that person's a madman.
I'm offering this with a side of germs. I've never thought about that before. I've never thought about the I thought that smoke somehow clears away the bacteria from the candle. I don't think I've ever, and now you put that in my mind, I'm never going to be able to eat a slice of birthday cake.
I'm sorry, genuinely, it's like, it's like they're treating saliva like Parmesan, just throwing it on top of your pasta.
Hold on now. I wonder if this is like... Do you remember as kids they would have chicken pox parties?
Wow.
Right? So when you were a kid, like, because if it was going round, it was like, you're going to get it. You might as well get it when it can be managed rather than be somewhere where you can't get it. Or after you've had your, you know, whenever. So they would have these chicken pox parties, get everyone get an immunity happening.
Ah, do you think that's what the government were trying to do 3 years ago?
Yes.
Where they're like, oh, it's a big COVID party. Yeah. Sorry.
Just no, exactly that. Exactly. Spread it round. I'm wondering if this was a way of like getting kids to get, because kids get, you know, I mean, it's changed a lot recently because there's a lot more of like people like being, kids are intolerant to this and that and the other. But I do think back, you know, when we were growing up, you know, like back in the 80s, or you're younger than me, so, you know, maybe 90s, kids needed to be near germs to just get an immunity to everything. So I wonder if that was the origin of blowing out candles on a birthday cake, was we've all got to share a bit of bacteria around because we all live together.
Maybe. I know that, like, the whole point of everyone gathering around Colin the Caterpillar, to me, can just fuck off. Sorry to swear.
He's a petri dish.
He's an absolute petri dish. You just gather around a piece of food that you're not that arsed about, and then everyone consumes it together. You've no choice in the matter. Everyone has to eat the same bit of dessert. Like, I would rather like a trio of desserts, maybe a profiterole or something like that. But to have a candle on top of it, It just is crazy to me.
So it's sort of cooking it, but not cooking it. So it's slightly heating the top layer as well.
Yeah.
To have a cold cake underneath. See, I've never really had anyone come on and do an unpopular opinion that's convinced me into thinking, actually, that's
really?
Rank. Yeah, yeah. But I just hadn't thought about spraying spittle, Alison.
Absolutely. Look, that's, and people have asked me before, is that my stage name? And I'm like, why would I pick the name of something that hangs off the side of your mouth? What does that say? Glamour. I'd rather be Alison Sparkle. I should have done that. Should have changed. Imagine being
Alison Sparkle. Oh my God. Oh, please. I think you should make Alison Sparkle your alter ego. Or just Ali Sparkle.
Ali Sparks? Alison Sparkle. She's an 80s soap diva icon. Who's had 8 marriages and
she just walks into a room with a cigarette on the go and huge shoulder pads.
Yeah, just like, I've had men like you before and I'll have you again.
I think we should write this soap. You can start, look, this is what happens, as we discussed earlier on, as a working class, you just make your own work. You create your own. If you don't get cast in the nativity play, if you're not a Nepo baby, you just have to create your own soaps, alter egos, and I can't wait. We'll do like a cat fight. We'll do some hair pulling and stuff.
Oh, I would love that.
That pure 80s soap.
I would, look, if I was to go into a soap nowadays, I think I would be like Alison Sparkles, the new injectionist in the beauticians, and I don't have a license, you know, and I'm just running away from, like, what from people who've had botched jobs.
I've got a botched Botox.
Yeah, and I just slap it off the side of their face to the other side, and it fixes it. It's perfect, you know. Get out of my pub. Slap.
It's time for our historic beef. Two Italian men having a row is my absolute fave, unless one of them is my husband. Well, actually, he is Scottish-Italian, so he's passionate, doesn't like to talk about it. But I think as a society, we are obsessed with Italian men feuding. Think Mafia Dons, Enzo Ferrari and Ferruccio Lamborghini. Think Michelangelo and old Leo DV. So Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, I think they're the ones who originally kick this obsession off of Italian men fighting that historically we've become obsessed with. So these two were, they were not lovers and fighters. They were peers and rivals. So the best way to describe, they famously sniped at each other throughout their careers. Ooh. They're not the same age. Michelangelo was in his 50s when Leonardo da Vinci was in his 20s.
Oh, I'm kind of on Michelangelo's side already because he's older.
I found this account originally reported. The above anecdote is recounted in an anonymous manuscript, apparently written in the late 1540s. But presumably by their version of Heat magazine, like the Heat magazine of the Renaissance era. I don't know what it would be called. Look, hello, okay. I mean, okay magazine, quite often populated by people who are quite clearly not okay. But
yeah.
maybe it would have just been called Paint or Polymath Weekly. You know, these were the polymaths.
Yeah, polymath bitch. You know,
polymath like pop bitch. There we go. So according to Polymath Bitch, this anonymous account, Leonardo da Vinci and his friend Giovanni di Gavina were passing the public benches at the Palazzo Spinifaroni, and I'm probably massacring the Italian here, so we'll get lots of complaints, near Florence Church of Santa Trinita. Some men were debating a passage in Dante. They called out to Leonardo, asking him to expound the passage for them. By chance, Michelangelo happened to be passing too, and one of them hailed him. At this, Leonardo declared, "Michelangelo will be able to expound it for you." So the passage from Dante. Michelangelo assumed this was said to entrap him, causing him to reply, "No, you explain. You, who have undertaken the design of a horse to be cast in bronze but were unable to cast it and were forced to give up in shame." So saying, he turned his back on them and began to depart. Leonardo remained, blushing at these words. Finally, wishing to humiliate his rival further, Michelangelo called out again, "And to think you were believed by those castrated Milanese roosters."
Oh!
A lot to unpack here.
I think Michelangelo overdid it a bit. I don't know about you.
Yes, Michelangelo feels like he's been stopped to ask for an opinion. And I get that. I get that. Sometimes, you know when what it's like when you're having a conversation or a couple of people are having a conversation and you walk by or you come into it and you have no idea of the context of what's being discussed. And
you could just
drop in a rogue opinion and then all of a sudden you're absolutely in the shit. Imagine you're in the conversation, someone's like, "Well, Alison will explain this."
Yeah, it's like if you hear two people talking about someone and you'd be like, "Oh, yeah, they're really annoying, aren't they?" And they'll turn around and go, "Actually, they're quite sick at the moment and we were trying to," you know, and you're like, "Oh, I'm just very annoyed at the sickness that they have," you know?
Yes, it's a thing that happens quite a lot. There could be a bit of a slagging happening, to use an Irish phrase.
Absolutely.
And someone starts the slagging. And then if you join in, they go, "Well, actually, they're quite a nice person." And you go, "Okay, you just said something mean about them. And
totally.
I was just backing you up.
Totally.
And now I'm out
that.
Of order."
I hate that. Genuinely, I think all bets are... Like, literally, if I go into a slagging session with other people, I say... I put out my perimeters. I go, "There are two people that I love and I will not hear anything said against them. Everyone else, go for it." You know what I mean? Because I probably don't know them well enough to defend them or whatever. I'll
yeah, these people to the death. If you say anything, I will come down on you.
And you know what? Those two people are probably the two most difficult people I know that everyone should be. You know what I mean? That I'm like, "No, actually, they're actually quite nice."
So what we have to unpack here is someone being brought into a conversation. No, you explain it. Undertaking the design of a horse to be cast. So there's a critique there of Leonardo's skills, isn't
talent,
there? Like,
yes.
you cast a horse, but you were unable to cast it and you were forced to give up in shame. Like, you attempted a piece of art. Like, I don't know what the equivalent would be for comedians. It would be like you wrote a whole show and then it got a 1-star review.
That's it. Or you did a joke about something controversial and you got called out for it. And it wasn't good enough to be, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you couldn't back it up.
Yeah,
jokes. It's bringing up one of your failures as a job and then going, "And to think you were believed by those castrated Milanese roosters."
I love that.
Castrated Milanese rooster does sound like a dish in an Italian restaurant.
It does. It does. And I just love old-timey slagging off. Because it often is like farmyard animals, isn't it?
Yes, a cock or a rooster.
Tis a donkey, isn't it? You know?
You are an ass.
You are the son of an ass, or whatever. She is but a lamb.
Michelangelo, over the course of apparently his career, was aware of Leonardo's opinions. And then it says, which about the older artist does not seem to have been reticent. When Michelangelo was asked by Benedetto Varchi in 1549 about the Paragon, the long-standing debate about the ranking of the various arts, he wrote acidly, As to that man who wrote saying that painting was more noble than sculpture, if he'd have known as much about the other subjects on which he has written, why, my serving maid could have written better.
Maybe his serving maid is very good at writing, though. We don't know how good that maid was.
Yeah.
You know? She wasn't a Nepo baby. She was working class.
She was definitely working class. My serving maid could have written better. So,
yeah.
And that's about the debate, the long-standing debate about whether painting is more noble than sculpture.
What is noble, though?
Yeah, what is noble?
Who wants to be noble?
Is noble in the eye of the beholder?
Have you ever given a compliment to something by saying it's noble? Actually, I have. A dog. Like, once I said a dog had a very noble face.
Yeah. Horses and dogs come across as quite noble. You wouldn't say it about a cat. Cats aren't noble.
No, it's the longness of their face, isn't it?
Yes.
Cats are floozies. You know, dogs and horses.
So I'm trying to find if during my research, how much Leonardo kind of slung back at Michelangelo. And I did find this that said, it's also possible that Leonardo's warning in his notebook to an unnamed anatomical painter about the dangers of emphasising musculature for its own sake, resulting in figures that look like bags of walnuts, was a reaction to the heroically defined bodies created by Michelangelo. So obviously David... Michelangelo's David was very so he's kind of saying that your sculptures look like a bag of walnuts, which is, again, like we say, old-timey insults are great.
That's a great line, though. I literally exhaled on the microphone there like I was listening to a battle rap where someone had brought up someone's mum or something. I'm like, oh, because they do look like a bag of walnuts. Walnuts are incredibly muscular.
I think, again, in this, it's one of those ones where they say of the rivalry, I don't think they ever really made it up, but it did. They did push each other's work.
Yes.
So I think the insults about each other's work, and this often comes up if we're sort of discussing rivalries, I guess, is the idea that sometimes it can be bitter and angry and dangerous and damning, but it also can be a prompt for people to create better work, because if there's no one there to compare or contrast your work against, I guess, like, do we all write better comedy because, you know,
totally. There's
someone out there whose stuff you just go, ugh, I don't like the way they do it, but everyone seems to love them, you know. Not that I use that to write my entire Edinburgh shows.
That sounds like but it, do you know what, genuinely, I think, like, this year's, or my show that I'm touring now, what, is significantly better than other shows that I've done before, because I've moved to the UK, I understand how the process works, and also all of my peers around me are working their whole year towards that Edinburgh thing. And in Ireland it was different. You kind of got your club set, kind of you did like one big gig a year or whatever, and this is like a whole process, and you do get reviewed, and I didn't want to get bad reviews, so it did push me, and I was bitter at some points in Edinburgh, you know, where some, I mean, I have been like, oh, I think my show's better than that person's show, and that's a horrible feeling to have, but that feeling also helped me write better jokes.
Sometimes it's my show's better than their show, or sometimes it's like, oh my god, that's so wonderful that they've done that, and that makes me go, I need to produce something wonderful. One of the wonderful things about being surrounded by other people who do the form, you know, the creative art that you do in whatever form it takes, you know, because acting is a bit more of a team process, and that's all about supporting each other to make the whole end result great. And stand-up's very solitary, kind of like, you know, painters are or sculptors are, that you sometimes need people around you to measure what you're doing, to inspire you, as well as rivalries. So I think it can be very inspiring if you use it the right way.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all just dick jokes, though. I mean, it's not. I was comparing myself to Michelangelo.
Now, we're moving on, finally, before we close the podcast, to what I like to call Angry Aunt, which is where I take someone's side regardless. We get listeners sending in their problems. I've got one here that says, Dear Tiff, I've very recently written an intimate tell-all book talking about my family, in particular my brother. He's not talking to me. What's the best way to make up with a sibling? I mean, you can have a guess at who sent this letter in. He lives in America now.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, thank you for your recommendation for Elizabeth Arden 8 Hour Green. It has changed my life. You're not a spare to me. I feel like with that person, they may have had trouble communicating with their family before. This has got it all out in the open. And eventually people do forgive. So I think just give it time.
Yeah.
And don't regret what you did. You know?
No regrets. Yeah. Angry aunt says, fuck regret.
Absolutely.
I will get angry. I'm angry for you. Yeah. Some shit went down and it was really, really bad. So fuck regretting. But moving forward, can we approach each other as equals? Maybe not in this situation because there's a hierarchy and where a hierarchy is involved.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, I wonder, does Harry look at William and go, damn nepo babies?
I think that's a perfect point to finish on. Thank you for joining me on the podcast, Alison. It's been a joy. I've learned a lot about you. You've changed my mind on some things. Do you feel better now you've got it all off your chest?
Genuinely, I do. I hope, it's so hard, isn't it, sometimes to talk about stuff that makes you slightly angry? Because it feels weird to do it.
Anger has an energy, I suppose. Despair doesn't. And despair is kind of where anger goes if you don't get to express it in a healthy way.
Oh, that is incredible. You genuinely are a helpful therapist. I thought that was a joke at the start. And I'm like, wow.
What have you got coming up, Alison? Anything you want to share?
I do. I am touring with my show called Wet, which was one of the best reviewed shows of Edinburgh Fringe. I'm hitting everywhere. Belfast, London, on the 15th and 16th of March, I'm doing Soho Theatre, and that's my first ever time doing a Soho Theatre run.
That surprises
me.
So I'm
really excited.
That's again, nepo babies.
I've also got a podcast with Kerry Katona called Wheel of Misfortune that's coming back.
Well, I'm very excited to see that in March. I am also on tour. I'll be at Soho Theatre in May. So you could go on after listening to this. You can like, subscribe, write a nice little review about the podcast, and then maybe book tickets to see me and Alison at Soho Theatre. Follow me on Twitter. Send your problems in. Hashtag angry aunt. Send them to me on Twitter or even on Instagram, and we will try our best to address them on the show. Thanks so much for coming on, Alison.
Thank you so much. It's such an honour being on it. You really appreciate it.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.